19. The world ship's navigation crew did not have to be told to maneuver away from the interdictor, but once they did set a new course, a noise akin to dismay wafted from their area. Chulkong Law merely looked at Kozdok Bull. The warrior moved to the navigators, spoke briefly with them, and returned. In pained tones, he said, "There is confusion. 5 Dovan Basal mines have just chased 5 Millennium Falcons into our immediate space. Their attempts to seize the infidel ships are interfering with the world ship's Dovan Basals."
5 Millennium Falcons?
Yes.
And even 1 is enough to cause us grief.
A few kilometers away, another New Republic ship winked into existence. Errant Venture. It immediately opened up with all guns, directing damage against the world ship's surface, against the nearest Yuuzhan Vong capital ships.
"I've breathed," Luke said.
"Let's get 'em." With 4 coral skippers closing on his tail, Wedge hurtled away from Amud Swooper's course. The freighter was less than a minute from being able to enter hyperspace. A minute. Surely Wedge could hold the skips here that long, even at the cost of his life. Chulkong Law watched as his fleet became uncoordinated. Suddenly, coral skippers swarmed like awkward trainees. Villips everted as the commanders of his capital ship stopped receiving gravitic orders. The spike at the nose of Luzonkia was now visible through the viewing lens above. More of the ship had eroded, revealing even more spike. The gravitic interdiction of one of the triangle ships in orbit above the world ship was keeping his Dovan Basals from maneuvering Domain Hull out of Luzonkia's path. He ignored his commanders.
"Activate my son's Villip," he told Kozdok Bull.
A moment later, the Villip installed in the most prominent niche, everted, and took on the features of Tsavong La.
"What news, my father?" the War Master asked. "Has Borlias fallen?"
"Borlias has fallen," said Chulkong La, his voice weary.
"And have you slain all the infidels, or do some of their forces remain to flee?"
"Some forces remain."
"But still a great victory."
"No, son. Limited facts can point at victory when in fact there is only defeat to taste."
The Villip frowned. "Defeat? You have achieved the conditions of victory. You have once more brought glory to Domain La."
"In a minute I will be dead. Too many clever minds, however heretical they may be, have undone me.
But be quiet, my son, and know that my last words were reserved for you. Farewell, and may the gods smile upon you as they once did upon me."
Chulkong Law reached up to stroke the Villip. It inverted, carrying Tsavong Law's expression of bafflement with it. Kozdok Bull stepped before him.
"We are on the verge of victory, old one. Pull one last strategy out of your mind. Give us that last success."
Chulkong Law stared into the face of a warrior too stupid even to know regret. The old warmaster held his silence. He'd promised that his words to Tsavong Law would be his last. He would not diminish their value by breaking that promise. One of his officers, his voice quaking in fear or anger, or both, asked, "Shall I give the order to abandon Domain Hull?" Chulkong Law nodded. Suddenly, space was swarming with New Republic reinforcements. Gavin led off his thruster and watched, bemused, as 4 TIE interceptors off Mon Mothma strafed the coral skipper duo he and Neville had been dueling, shredding them by virtue of fresh pilots and fresh lasers.
"Rogue Squadron, regroup on me," Gavin said. "Let's let the latecomers escort Luzonkia in. Black Moons, how are you doing?"
"Rogue Leader, this is Black Moon 10. We're, not doing too well. 4 actives remain, not counting Black Moon 1 and 2, who are detached."
"Recommend you sit back and watch for a minute, then."
"Can't do it, Rogue Leader. One of our own appears to be in a furball back at Borlias. We're going back after him."
"We'll come with you."
Wedge finished his loop and headed back toward his 4 pursuers, They were firing long before he was aligned, but two of them, the survivors of Wedge's proton torpedo attack, were not firing accurately. Their undersides were charred, and Wedge suspected that those two coral skippers were damaged, injured, and in pain. Not that two healthy ones couldn't kill him. Wedge sideslipped, rotated to change his profile, juked and jinked to keep incoming plasma and Gretchen fire off him. As he approached the coral skipper formation, he drifted to port and squeezed off some stutterfire laser at the healthy skip on that side. He fired for only a fraction of a second, letting the short series of beams drift forward from the target's cockpit, watching as the skip's voids moved with the streams of coherent light and swallowed them. Then he switched the weapon over to quad-linked fire, flicked his targeting reticle back toward the cockpit, and fired, all in one quick motion. The voids continued forward for a brief, deadly fraction of a second. Wedge's laser slammed in behind them, punching through the pilot's canopy, punching through the pilot. Wedge's X-wing shook as plasma, not completely deflected by his shields, seared through his starboard lower S-foil. His diagnostics lit up with their report. Structural damage, but no interruption of engine power. The S-foil might collapse if flown into atmosphere, especially in firing position, but should hold up to all but the most rigorous of maneuvers in space. The last healthy coral skipper and its two injured wingmates were on his tail, pouring plasma after him. He heard impact after impact as the superheated projectiles hit his rear shields, watched the alarming drop of his shield power. His sensor board beeped, alerting him to an object in his path on collision course less than a second away. He began to twitch the X-wing yoke to sideslip him around the obstacle, but instead switched weapons controls back to proton torpedo and fired on it. Only then did he shove the yoke down. He saw the brilliant flash of the torpedo detonating above him, felt his X-wing rock as the shockwave from the explosion hammered him, but he switched back to lasers and hauled back on the yoke even as he was being battered. He was through the detonation zone in an instant, and there, meters above him, was the last healthy skip, its pilot still recovering from the unexpected detonation. Wedge fired and saw his lasers tear into the skip's underbelly. There was another explosion, this one far less severe, as the skip vented gases through the crater Wedge's lasers punched in the Yorick coral. The skip suddenly ceased maneuvering. A shrill alarm had been wailing in Wedge's ear since the explosion. Finally, he could spare an instant's attention to his diagnostics board. He cursed. His shields were down. Whether they had failed from the proton torpedo explosion or been stripped as a last act of the coral skipper's voids, he did not know, but he suspected the latter. It would explain why his last shot against the skip's underbelly was not blocked. Without shields, he was nearly as good as dead. He spared a glance for the two injured skips. They would be closing on him now. Predators coming after injured prey. Instead, they were moving away at high speed. Wedge laughed. Seeing the last intact skip of the squadron destroyed had caused their nerve to fail. They probably hadn't even detected that he had lost his shields. He wondered what they thought he was, another supposed godly manifestation, like Jaina. Then he stopped laughing. His sensors showed the coral skipper squadron from planetside had left the atmosphere and was racing up in the wake of Amud Swooper. They might intercept her before she reached a point from which she could launch into hyperspace, unless he maneuvered himself in the way, unless he persuaded a second squadron to duel with him. But if he did that, his X-wing, shieldless and damaged, he would die. He would die alone, and he would die anonymous, flying another pilot's X-wing, with no record left behind of his having been here. Yella and his children would never know what had become of him. He swung around on an intercept course and hit his thrusters. Turning his back on the Amud Swooper, leaving her to be destroyed by the Yuuzhan Vong when she was so close to escape, would not allow him to live. It would just give him time to tidy up his affairs before guilt, the crushing weight of responsibility abandoned, caused him to find some other way to die. Coming in at an oblique angle to the new coral skipper's course, Wedge fired at maximum possible distance. On his sensor board, he saw no indication that his laser fire had done any damage. But after a moment, the squadron of skiffs vectored, angling toward him. He could have cheered. They, too, wanted a challenging kill rather than some defenseless freighter. Had their decision not guaranteed his death, he would have cheered. Wedge kept up his fire, jerking his X-wing back and forth in a bone-jarring evasive pattern, seeing plasma fire streak above, to port, to starboard. His sustained lasers fired straight down the voids of the foremost skip, only occasionally drifting far and fast enough to one side to hit Yorick Coral. He felt a tremendous impact, and the starfield was suddenly rotating outside his canopy. The X-wing no longer responded to his control of the yoke. Systems failure alarms shrilled in his ears, and he knew he was dead. Eldo Davip locked down the auxiliary bridge controls, then slapped the button for the new door at the chamber's rear. It slid open instantly, undamaged, revealing the Y-wing beyond. A Y-wing. He shook his head as he ran to the cockpit and clambered within. The starfighter was as old as he was, if not older. He suspected it was one of the assembly of spare parts vehicles that had been used to fabricate the pipe fighters. As he closed the canopy, the door into the auxiliary bridge snapped shut, and another bulkhead slid open meters ahead of him, allowing him a view of space flanked by the emissions of Luzonkia's powerful thrusters. He started up the starfighter's engines, but couldn't yet launch. A jury-rigged screen and set of controls went live, and once again Davip could see through Luzonkia's remaining forward holocabs, could see instrument readouts. The dying Superstar Destroyer was drifting to starboard. This probably wasn't navigational failure. Instead, some Dovan Basal on the surface of the worldship had to be exerting its gravitational power against Luzonkia, trying to turn the vessel aside. It might work, too. No Dovan Basal was going to be able to entirely deflect the millions of tons of Luzonkia to counteract the tremendous kinetic energy built up during the ship's constant acceleration toward the worldship. But a Dovan Basal might be able to turn her protruding spearhead aside to reduce the penetration of impact. Davip wouldn't have that. He resumed direct control of Luzonkia and increased thrust output from her starboard engines, redlining them, bringing the spear point back in line. He'd just stay here and make sure everything went according to plan. Chulkong La watched as the sharp prow of Luzonkia grew in the sky, approaching with a meticulous precision that he could, with a growing sense of detachment, appreciate. Up close, the crudeness of the protruding spike became evident. He could see scar-like welds, suggesting that the thing had been assembled in sections within the triangle ship. Still, its simplicity and the fact that it had succeeded in serving its intended purpose was admirable. It entered the worldship's atmosphere, and a moment later struck the viewing lens immediately above, and Chulkong La was gone. The prow of Luzonkia hit the worldship, 8 kilometers up, before the shock of that impact had ever been transmitted along Luzonkia's body. Eldo Davit fired his thrusters and shot out of the vessel's stern. He passed between 2 of the vessel's thrusters and saw his diagnostics light up as they anticipated possible life support failure. But then the yellows faded to a safe green. But still he was feeling vibration. Had he sustained damage that the diagnostics didn't detect? It took him a moment to realize that the vibration wasn't from his Y-wing. It was from him. As he set a course to take him to a formation of allied starfighters, he tried to stop shaking, but he couldn't. Coming around the far side of the worldship, Luke and Mara saw Luzonkia dive into the worldship's surface. It seemed to Luke that a ripple spread out from the point of impact, either a shockwave or an animal contraction of pain. The Superstar Destroyer, her kinetic energy scarcely slowed by the impact, continued to plow into the world ship. 100-meter-long remnants of the ship's superstructure sheared off from the solid core, but that core plunged inexorably deeper into the world ship. In moments, as the orbit of the two Jedi brought them closer to the impact zone, Luzonkia's core was swallowed by the world ship. Her superstructure scraped off and left behind, mountain-high, on the world ship's surface. Then the surface of the world ship shuddered. Luke knew what that meant. 8 or more kilometers below the surface, the spear point of the core had exploded. Then the next 100-meter section behind it would detonate. Then the one behind that. A chain of destruction reaching all the way back to what had once been Luzonkia's stern. As they passed over the Superstar Destroyer's wreckage, the mountain of scrap leaped skyward, propelled by a volcano-like eruption from beneath the surface as the last of Luzonkia's core sections detonated. The flash from the explosion was brilliant, and the force of the explosion jetted into the sky, looking for one brief moment like a red-orange lightsaber blade kilometers in length. The surface of the world ship heaved, great jagged cracks flowing with a red-black substance Luke did not care to contemplate spread out from Luzonkia's impact point as the world ship began to die. His ship, protected by the remains of Charot Krall's Special Operations Group, horror watched the crash and detonation. He could feel blood drain from his face, could feel the strength of his legs begin to fail. He sat heavily in the captain's seat, wordless. "The infidels appear to be grouping again," his pilot said. "Shall we join these coral skippers in a counterattack?" "What's the point?" Harar whispered. "Take us back to Coruscant. Take us back where we can look on victory instead of disaster." On his next spin, Wedge saw the squadron of skips turn back toward him. He aimed and fired after them, a final defiant gesture, but his weapon failed to discharge. On his next spin, he could see the incoming skips, but beyond them, witnessed the brilliant flash of light that heralded Luzonkia's demise. "I'm not exactly going to miss you," he said. The incoming coral skippers opened fire. At this range, only one of the plasma projectiles hit. Wedge felt it crash into and through the X-Wing's stern, and suddenly he was spinning even faster, watching the stars rotate by at bewildering speed. Then things became more complicated. Unable to quite resolve the picture outside his canopy into a comprehensible one, growing dizzier by the minute, Wedge thought he saw red lasers flashing among the orange-red plasma balls. He was certain he saw one coral skipper detonate, then two. End of Side 7. To continue, turn the cassette over. Side 8. Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Enemy Lines 2, Rebel Stand, by Aaron Alston. Continuing on page 364. There were E-wings and X-wings near him, the latter painted in the standard New Republic colors, and his comlink crackled to life, a woman's voice fading in and out. "Black Moon 10, 11, are with us?" He activated his jury-rigged comm board. "Black Moon 10, this is Black Moon 11. That's a copy. Still here, but about to throw up."
"Hold on, shuttle. It'll be here. Minutes."
Then there was a new voice, stronger because the broadcasting X-Wing hovered only 50 meters away. Wedge recognized the voice as Gavin Darklighter's. "Black Moon 11, what did you think you were doing going after an entire squadron?"
"My job."
"That's my job, sir,"
Wedge grinned. "My job, sir."
"Son, if you develop piloting skills in proportion to your nerve, someday they'll call you the greatest pilot of all time." Gavin, baffled, stared down at his comm board. "Black Moon 11, are you still there?" But Black Moon 11 didn't respond, at least not with words. The only thing emerging from Gavin's comport was laughter. Laughter that was somehow familiar. The New Republic forces staged mop-up and withdrawal operations. Starfighter squadrons collected themselves, escorted rescue shuttles, defended their capital ships from the uncoordinated attacks of the Yuuzhan Vong. But it would not be long before a new Yamask was brought into the system, not long before more Yuuzhan Vong reinforcements made the system untenable. One after another, the divisions of Borlyash's defenders launched into hyperspace to travel to their first rendezvous point. The world they left behind was, for now, Yuuzhan Vong property. The stand here had served its intended purpose. The advisory council and its supporters had enjoyed months in which to plot their next moves, defenses, surrenders, tricks, but the advisory council might never know what else had been done during those months, what plans had been made, what foundations had been laid for a resistance that would not depend on them.